Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, welcome to the first edition of Blues Talk of 2021. So, boys, looking back over our defeat in first game in 26 against Connacht, we were beaten 35-24 last weekend. Look back at all the other Pro 14 action, and of course, look forward to our big game against Ulster on Friday night. So, lads, disappointing way to lose our unbeaten record.
It's enough to make you want to storm the Capitol building.
Great topical, Dave.
Yeah. I like to bring the zeitgeist. Very disappointing performance. Some mitigating factors, not as many as you'd hope for, but there were some. But it was a poor performance all around. Experienced guys, inexperienced guys, none of them played to the standard we know they can. And you know, Connacht were at the sharpest, and they took advantage.
Yeah, Connacht played a great game. They were in our faces from minute one, but we should have known that was coming. You know, they've been doing that to the team. You know, they were very close to Racing in Paris, not so close to Ulster, considering Ulster had a second string out when they played them. But you know, they have shown, and historically, they always seem to keep their performances for Leinster. I don't know why, or you know, they never seem to play as well against Munster or even Ulster as they do against us. I don't know what it is. Maybe because they've got a lot of our ex-players, or don't know what it is, but they're always up for a game. And in fairness, they were robbed a couple of years ago by, you know, there were 17 minutes to, or there were 17 points with 11 minutes to go, and we held them back. Which, you know, robbed is possibly the wrong word, but, you know, it was definitely a very tight game.
It was definitely an act of burglary.
Yeah, they were unlucky to come out on the wrong side of it. So we had to lose sometime, and I'd rather lose to Connacht than lose to most other teams in the world, in fact. Connacht being everybody's second favourite team, so better to get beaten by your second favourite than your 38th favourite team. So yeah, fair play to them. It has to be said, you know, that it was great for them, and they didn't celebrate it like it was a cup final. Kind of, you might have expected them to. Their second win since 1950 something in Dublin, I believe. Certainly, their first since 2002, and only their second of the millennium. So, you know, pretty incredible stuff for them. As regards us, yeah, it was one of those off days where we just didn't get to the pitch of the game. Sexton gone off early was a bit of an omen. He wasn't exactly having a stormer, but you know, sure, nobody was. And then had to go off, and they persisted. I think their plan was originally to put to give Jack O'Brien a go at out half. You know, probably more likely when the game was more secure rather than when it was in dire straits. But they stuck with that plan rather than bringing on Hawkshaw, who kind of did steady the ship a little bit when he did come on. He made a couple of mistakes, but he had a reasonably good game. He was one of a few highlights.
I couldn't understand it. Still can't. Yeah.
I think it was probably just a dialed in call that they had, and they just kept with it rather than react to the.
I think that they don't make any changes. You know, like if Frawley was supposed to start that game, he pulled out. They brought Sexton in, but they kept McGrath at captain. You know, they tried to make as few changes as possible, even though you're bringing on the club captain. And like, as you say, Jimmy O'Brien, I presume, was to play backup out half. And they persisted with that, even though they had Hawkshaw on the bench. But, you know, Hawkshaw, when he came on, he made a bit of a difference. I mean, he...
I think he made...
He is an out half. Yeah, like, I mean, he was unlucky for, I think it was the correct call, what was crossing, but, you know, he took that disallowed try very well. And it was kind of reminded me, like, obviously there's a lot to learn, but kind of reminded me of Mark Ella back in the day, you know, saying if I touch the ball twice, we'll score. And he showed a lot of confidence. I think he was probably showed a little bit of naivety as well when he threw that intercept pass at the very end for Daly to storm in under the sticks. But it was far more positives from his performance than negatives.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I mean, at the end of the day, I said it before, I mean, he's an out half, and you have an out half playing out half. It's kind of the point of the whole thing. It was just a really bad, it was an off day from 1 to 23 and for the guys in the judges box.
There was one guy I thought was outstanding. It was Ryan Baird playing six.
No, Ryan, yeah, no, fair enough. Yeah, yeah. Right,
from 1 to 5
and 7 to 23, then I'll certainly give you that.
Yeah. Every time I see that lad play, you know, you just go, geez, he's got some potential.
And he's exciting for sure, yeah.
Absolutely. I'm getting carried away here, but like,
he's the best player you've ever seen.
No, but I'm telling you, he's like,
I don't like you, Jason.
He would be Otojo-esque in that he, you know, physically he kind of even reminds me of him. He's that tall, rangy kind of guy. Maybe not, like, he's obviously only in his early 20s, so needs a few more seasons of doing weights and building his strength and all that. But like, he's got some step on him, and every time, not dissimilar to James Ryan, every time he gets the ball, he makes meters. He's not prepared to take, you know, to be driven back in a tackle. He drives and drives and drives his legs to get over that cane line.
He's actually, actually made to Otojo very good. And indeed, he's more similar to Otojo than he is to James Ryan. James Ryan is, for all his excellence, an orthodox lock. Whereas Ryan Baird is that kind of, you know, hybrid kind of, that modern hybrid of a back row and a lock. When he's in the loose, he can play like a loose forward. When he's in the tight, he can carry like a member of the tight five. So he's certainly got made an excellent start to his career. He to a certain extent as well, a guy he reminds me of, although not, you know, in terms of pure physical power, but in terms of ability to switch position and, as you say, make ground, is a young Ian Henderson. When Ian Henderson first broke onto the ground, there were serious questions about whether his best position was in the second row or at number six, because of his ability to make ground and his mobility and the fact he appeared at the time to have relatively decent hands, although they have turned somewhat boobular since. So, you know, the situation with Baird is, he was I would say he was the only one pretty much who came out of that game with any credit, as you correctly corrected me there, Jake. But the result itself has put us... Do you remember there, about a week ago, John sent a text around saying how Leinster were in trouble in terms of, you know, qualifying as winners for the thing? And laughed at him, we did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've kind of coming up. We'll win that game. It'll be tough, but we'll win that. And then we've Ulster. It'll be tough, but we'll win that. Blah, blah, blah. Now we're in a situation where we have to un-poo-poo John, which is not something I thought I'd ever say. And, you know, we're in a situation now against Ulster where this is a must-win game. You know, we're
absolutely. No question.
You know, we're 10 points... What is it? 10 points behind. We've two games in hand, admittedly, but one of them is away to Munster.
Yeah, and away to Scarlets.
I mean, whatever about Scarlets, but Munster, going away to Munster is always tough. And if the date is the wrong date for us in terms of internationals or whatever, you could find yourself with a... You know, not a great team, a team not unlike last weekend's, going down to Thomond Park in a must-win game. So you're gonna want to pick up points everywhere. And so this it's Friday night, isn't it? Friday night becomes absolutely vital.
Ulster have been very lucky in that they've had no cancellations due to COVID.
Yeah.
They're also out of Europe, so they don't have a distraction. Ulster are kind of in the box seat.
Are they out of Europe or out of the European Cup?
Well, they're out of the European Cup.
Well, they've lost their opening two games, so they'll find it difficult to scrape up into the, the middle four.
The middle four might be guessing, but they're definitely out of the top four.
Wasn't that what we were arguing?
Undoubtedly out of the top four.
Yeah, so they're in the box seat in the league for those reasons. Everybody else, almost. I think there's one other team. I think Cardiff might be the other team who've got who've played all their games. But you know, most teams are missing one or two games that they're going to have to claw back. If another one goes, like there's only three free weekends. I know we talked about it before, and you were saying, oh, they can play during the week like they did in the Premiership. But you know, I think we're reaching a point in the season generally where. They've also crowbarred in this Rainbow Cup thing at the end. So there's so many games and so few weekends. Yeah,
that's looking very doubtful. I mean, there's like serious talk of the Lions being postponed, you know, and like, you know, this like obviously the Rainbow Cup is going to come in April, whereas the Lions is going to happen in July and August. So unless they move all the South African teams up here.
The reason for the Rainbow Cup is in part to give South African players some match exposure in advance of the Lions Tour. If the Lions Tour is off, then what's the point of the Rainbow Cup kind of thing at this point in the season?
Yeah, but my point is it's going to get... If it goes too much later in the season, like maybe now they're in a position where they could cancel the Rainbow Cup and reschedule the rest of the season for the 12 teams that are in it. However... If it goes up towards the final in March and it hasn't been called off, then you know we're playing our final on the 27th. Not we as Leinster, but the Pro 14 are playing their final on the 27th of March, is it?
Yeah. But the problem with that is the decision can't be made until the Lions make a decision.
Of course, but this is where it's all going to. You know, we're getting what my point was is that we're getting to a point in the season where. COVID is actually going to destroy the season and there's going to have to be a decision made as to how to finish it all off or what to do. You know, we may have to change things because it's kind of unfair to teams. If you look at Exeter, for example, getting...
John, they need the money, John. Like,
well, that's true.
It's nothing about fairness here. It's TV deals, it's sponsorship deals. These clubs are on the brink of going out of business. They have to play the games. And it, like, let's face it, we don't give a fuck whether Leinster finish first or last in the league once that they're a viable entity next season. Do you know what I mean?
Well, we do give a fuck, but we don't give much of a fuck.
I want my team... what's the point of winning the league this year and being defunct next year?
The match is having to build.
Absolutely not.
I mean, at this stage, it's a survival game. Jason's right there. It is a survival game. And, you know, you look at the situation in France, you look at the situation in England, particularly in England, where a lot of clubs are operating on are operating on zero margins anyway. Or worse, indeed, they're operating on zero margins of their ability to control their debt. Never mind, you know, breaking even or making a profit. So Jason's right there. Games have to be played so that checks can be signed. That's the be all and end all of it at this point in time in the sport. It's become it's an existential threat to professional rugby in certainly Britain and Ireland.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they should stop the season. I'm just saying that they should make it.
I think what John's saying is they should make a call on what to do with the remainder of the season.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like that.
If we get to a position in, we'd say, February, where we know that there's going to be no Rainbow Cup, then play a full Pro 14 season.
Yeah, or fuller.
I agree.
Fuller.
We've seen today the announcement from the government about the restrictions on travel from, you know, South Africa and from England. So you've got those two countries, whereas... Like, obviously, South Africa is struggling big time with COVID. You know, maybe it might be the best thing in the world to be sending down teams every second weekend to play down there.
And the other thing is, because the Lions Tour is such a cash piñata, the four home nations and the three home nations in Ireland are kind of really need that tour to go ahead at this point in time, or need some tour to go ahead at this point in time, whether it's to South Africa or to France or somewhere. They need the lines this summer is you know, almost necessary for the bank balances.
Yeah. Because
even if you had a situation where the tour to South Africa was cancelled, and obviously that's obviously lines versus South Africa is the attention grabbing and indeed money grabbing kind of event of the year. If the Lions had to tour France for half the money, it's still a huge amount of money that would come into England, Ireland, Wales, and Scotland. So the Lions kind of has to go ahead, whether no matter what happens, how it happens, it has to happen.
Yeah, I was listening to something today about it, you know, and like they were kind of, I think it was Don Lennon was talking about it. And like he said, each, like for instance, let's say they decided to postpone this tour and then they just shifted it all down for another 4 years. So he said, like, Australia can't survive. It's their schedule next in 4 years' time. Yeah. They rely every on that 12-year massive influx of money into their rugby union to survive. Sadly, but it's true. And if you kind of push that out, so it's going to be 8 years instead of 4 years, you know, given their precarious financial position added in with COVID and whatever, like they're not going to survive. Likewise, so you think about it. So then like if they postpone it to 2022, like Ireland are down in New Zealand, Wales are in South Africa, and England are in Australia. So again, presumably, you know, there's lots of English expats living down there. They're going to sell out, you know, Sydney Stadium, Melbourne and Perth or wherever they're going to play their three tests. So like that's revenue that's going to be taken away from Australia next season if the Lions is postponed. So, you know, you're kind of then thinking like the whole point of the Lions is to go on tour. Obviously South Africa don't want to give up the, you know,
revenue
for the local revenue economy for 35,000 people to travel down, you know, hotel nights, meals, tourism, all that kind of stuff that's going to be lost to the economy if they say, oh, well, I tell you what we'll do, we'll play it, you know, we play a match in Dublin and a match in Edinburgh and so on and spread it around the home unions. Like, is that going to work for South Africa? Are they going to be happy with that? Particularly missing out on the tourist dollars or
it might be as much, it might be better than nothing.
Yeah, that's true too.
Because as things stand, I find it very hard to see how a Lions tour to South Africa can go ahead with the situation as we have and the situation as forecast. The Lions playing either at home for the first time, or not for the first time, but you know what I mean, actually playing a series at home or going to France is really the only viable option. And it's the only viable option for everyone involved, including South Africa, because, you know, getting a cut of that deal is better than a cut of no deal whatsoever.
Yeah. Like, there was an interesting piece in the Irish Times either today or yesterday, just basically saying, you know, the IRFU is going to be down by 10 million in gates and hospitality receipts because they don't expect, like, their best case scenario is to have 1 meter distancing in the Aviva for matches in the autumn. So it won't be till this time next year that they're expecting the full 50,000 in the Aviva. And I think that 1 meter distance gives you about 20,000.
It's 19,000 for 1 meter distance.
Yeah. So like it's going to be, say, I don't know, whatever that is, you know, 50% full or 40% full. But you're talking about, say, if they, like the Six Nations is going to be affected then, because presumably they're going to be played in front of empty stadiums. And in that article, it mentioned that there's 13 games over the Six Nations. If those matches go ahead in front of empty stadiums, it's 100 million in gate receipts and hospitality just on, you know, going into the stadium, not let alone the, you know, all of the amount of spend that, you know, visitors into the six different cities are going to bring every weekend.
God, I'm depressed.
Well, yeah. Apologies for steering you all down this road. We were busy talking about Connacht.
It's something we have to address, because you know it's as you say, the Lions tour is, or whatever happens with the Lions, or particularly South African rugby, it is key to what happens with the rest of the Pro 14 season, and key to what happens, you know, to the rest of the, to a certain extent, to the rest of the European season. I mean, pushing the Lions tour on a year isn't going to work, because as Jason has pointed out, all the nations are on their own tours, and also there's the fact that national coaches have a World Cup coming up, and it's, you know, they're well into their World Cup planning next year. They're not going to want to give up, you know, a tour, you know, 2 years out from a World Cup. That would damage their preparation for that World Cup. So, I mean, the Lions has to play this year or not at all, and playing not at all isn't an option, because it would cause catastrophic financial damage to a number of unions.
And it's, you know, let's face it, there's a lot of merchandise sold around Lions matches. It's a huge big seller of jerseys. Okay, even if I was, you know, if they were talking of possibly playing a game in Croke Park, don't know why that would happen, but you could imagine like the demand of tickets that there would be for that game and the price of them. And, you know, like it might be an opportunity maybe for a lot of people who live in Britain and Ireland to go and see the Lions, because obviously the distances are quite difficult to get to, you know, because you got to go to the other side of the world to see them play. So maybe it might be an opportunity for the home unions to regain some cash by playing those matches in London, Cardiff, and Edinburgh.
I suggest it's because of its size, and you could get, you know, maintaining an appropriate and acceptable level of social distancing with Croke Park, you could still get 30,000 into the stadium, which would be a decent return. So,
you know, yeah. Anyway, boys, let's just have a quick chat about some of the other Pro 14 fixtures before we look forward to Ulster game. I watched a couple of the Welsh derbies, and like snooze fest. It was aerial ping pong, kicking the ball away. It was very, very poor, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I remember it was near... was it when we first started doing this, or when we first started doing Blood, Sweat and Beers, there was a Dragon Scarlets match, I think it was, in Newport.
Yeah.
That we raved about for months afterwards. It's one of the most brilliant games of rugby we've ever seen. Just in terms of the competitiveness and the closeness and the way it swung back and forth. That didn't happen this weekend. Nowhere near to that happened this weekend. It was dreadful stuff.
Maybe there's a reason that the four Welsh clubs currently sit equally fourth and fifth in both conferences. You know, there's a distinct... one and two on both sides of the conference A and B are the Irish, the four Irish clubs, and then the four Welsh clubs are...
They are where they are, because they are what they are.
Yeah. Well, I had the misfortune to see a good bit of the Scottish derby, which was... Well, it wasn't that bad of a game, but it was nil all at 50 minutes or something like that.
Yeah, but it was still a better game than the Welsh games.
Says
something.
The Scots are both are fifth in both conferences. It's a nice symmetrical table.
It is. And the Italians are sixth.
You know, so...
Actually, the Italian derby was a good one.
Didn't see it.
Saw a little bit of it.
Yeah, that was... At least it was competitive.
And so that was a good result for Zebre. They beat Treviso 24-15 away from home.
Yeah, good result from Zebre playing some progressive rugby as well, it must be said.
Like, that's their second win out of nine. So, okay, I know they're sixth, but they're on the right track. Like, Treviso just are one of these infuriating teams that they haven't won any games from the eighth that they've managed to play. You know, and maybe a couple of seasons ago, you thought they were on the verge. If they had a beaten Munster, like they were so close to winning that game against Munster maybe two seasons ago, and you might have just seen something happening for them.
Well, that's Treviso, isn't it? They go out and they beat Stade Francais and then lose to Zebre.
Yeah. I saw a very interesting documentary on YouTube. It was one of these rugby pass documentaries, and it was kind of behind the scenes of Zebre from a couple of seasons ago, just when Mick Bradley took over. It was quite interesting to see, and sort of like, you know, I suppose it gave you a bit of an insight into their club, and it seems to be a fairly well-run and efficient organization. You know, it's not kind of, do you remember that they made one about Connacht about 10 years ago, and it just seemed to be all about, oh, woe is us, and we're always the underdogs, and we have it so hard. Didn't seem to be like that about them.
Marcy album before he was a racist.
The one other game that was on has a bit of relevance to us, the Munster versus Ulster derby. Ulster went off to a lead and then stuttered to a halt. And didn't quite get caught by Munster, but
Munster did what I said they had to do. They dragged Ulster down to their level, but dragged Ulster down to playing a game that Munster wanted to play rather than the game that Ulster wanted to play. And they did it, you know, mainly through their halfbacks. As we said, I thought their halfbacks were excellent that day. Mm. Thought they were really, really good. Craig Casey.
Yeah.
It's always interesting with a scrum half. I think it might have been Kieran Bracken said it, actually. He was talking about his career a couple of years ago. He said the worst season for a new scrum half is the second season. And he was asked why. Why do you say that, Kieran? He says, because the opposition has video. If you're a talented scrum half, your first season, you always go really, really well. It's your second season. And Craig Casey's going really, really well.
We'll see.
Yes, he's a good player.
Ulster are actually doing quite well without an awful lot of players. I was thinking of all the guys that they had that either through selection or injury were unavailable on Friday night, and you know they were missing quite a few. They were missing, obviously, Jack McGrath's not there for whatever reason, and they were missing Henderson. Jordy Murphy wasn't there. Sean Reedy didn't start. Is injured. Balakoon isn't playing at the moment. He's injured. Ludic is injured. You know, those are guys who are significant players for Ulster. Luke Marshall is injured. they've actually developed a significant amount of depth when you think about it. Because actually, I'd say now, if you'd looked at that Ulster team, you would have said, oh, that's a fairly strong Ulster team, and you know, close to first choice. And then you think, actually, of all the guys that are missing, and you don't actually miss them. Or you don't think you miss them.
Indeed.
Munster, John. Munster managed to do us a massive favour, though.
Oh, yeah.
Because Ulster did get off to the flying start, as you mentioned. They got their first two tries within the first 20-odd minutes. And I thought, oh, here we go. This is a comprehensive hammering, and it's going to be a five-pointer. Luckily, they didn't, and obviously, them only getting the 4 points at home means that we're just 10 points behind.
Yeah, well, the thing is, we do have two games in hand now. Yes, as you both said, they're Scarlets away and Munster away, not the ideal games to have in hand. But our little point and their lack of a point, and the fact that we had 7 bonus point wins, and I think they had, they've only 5 bonus points out of the 10 game, whatever it is.
Six bonus points out of their 10 games.
So they've only dropped, or they've dropped 4 points in bonus points. We've dropped 4 points by losing to Connacht. So, you know, beat them and it's game on again. Okay, it's a hard game on, but it's still game on. But lose to them and, you know,
We do play them twice. We play them home and away. So I think we play them in round 16 as well. So, you know, that's a far from done deal league. If you think we've got 2 games in hand, if we win this game, even a four points to 1 win, I'm presuming now we're going to get try bonus point wins in our 2, which obviously is a big ask. in our two games against, in it with two games in hand, you know, that still puts us in a comfortable position over them.
Well, I wouldn't be presuming a try bonus point in either Munster or Scarlett. Okay,
fine. But even if it's 4-4, John, even if it's 4-4 and we beat them with 4-1, it means that of our games in hand, we've got 8, and then we've beaten them, which we've got 4, where they've only got 1. So we've got 12, and they've got 1 onto their 10 gap. So we're actually 1 ahead if that sequence of results.
We'll have it in our own hands to beat them.
Then we have to go to Ravenhill to beat them.
It's in our own hands. If we don't, it becomes considerably more difficult. So we have to beat them. And the question is, between, you know, it looks like some of the internationals may be back, which might hold true for Ulster as well. But it looks like we'll have some of our internationals back, which we need badly at this point. The Leinster have to make a signal performance because Ulster can smell blood in the water.
Yeah, there's a few. They gave the injury update today, and there was a bit of good news. Larmer's back in contention after his dislocated shoulder, which he did last October. He's back ahead of time. Ruddock, Conan and Ed Burner seem to be okay. And then Scott Penny and Sexton are still going through the return to play protocol. So I presume they're not going to be risked, you know, considering it's only a 6-day turnaround from when they did get injured.
What's the story with Ross Byrne?
I'm not sure about Ross Byrne. Harry Byrne, though, they reckon that he still might need a little bit more time.
Mm. Yeah, we're kind of snookered for out half. So Frawley's okay-ish. Sexton looks like he's probably out. Ross Byrne, we don't know, and Harry Byrne is going to be out. Like, who's playing out half? Like, we still have to beat Ulster.
I'm singing the praises of Hawkshaw again. I just think the kid's got a lot of talent. I may be a bit biased, I probably am, because of the connection with Kumain. But I just thought he looked very composed when he was now. He's played 3 pro games, but
I would be equally biased, yeah. I agree with you. He does look like he's the real thing. Look, at the end of the day, and this was the big, finally highlighted and brought stark into view. It doesn't matter who's playing out half if your hooker can't hit a cow's arse with a banjo.
That's true, and I'm gonna play the part of Jason here and say, you don't mean to tell me that you're gonna go and play Ulster, top of the table team, with bloody Hawkshaw, who's only a wet day in the job and. So, no, there's my aggression at Jason there. Sorry, well, Jason.
If no one else, John, what are they going to do?
Absolutely, but, you know.
We have to.
Oh, yeah, I get you. I mean, like, I want Sexton to start, but if he's injured, well, he can't play. You know, if the two Byrne brothers are out and if Frawley's out, we're down to number 5, so.
Yeah, it's a sad, sad situation. And it's getting more and more absurd, unfortunately.
You mentioned about the hookers not. Did you see there was some data published from one of the big agencies comparing the players in the 3 different leagues? And it looked like the guys who play hooker don't get the most or the least amount of money in their contracts.
Maybe we could organise some bonus kind of line out hitting pay bonus thing because I don't know. I mean, it's actually a worrying situation. Put it this way: if it was if you were down by 4 in a European final and you had a penalty and it was kicked to the corner, how confident would you be that any of our hookers would hit a jumper?
I'd want them to take the points, Dave.
If you're 4 points.
Okay, sorry, I take the scrum.
Yeah, you'd really have to, wouldn't you?
I mean, like, it's, you know, this is a thing that's going on for 10 years. Like, I can remember we played Claremont in Claremont, and it was the same crack. We had an opportunity to win a game, and we couldn't execute our simple throw it to the 6'10" guy and catch it and we couldn't execute it. And it's been going on a long, long time over a lot of different personnel.
And here's the thing. I know cash is tight, but we didn't replace Tamani with a foreign player. Scott Farrelly's contract is up at the end of the season, and I'm pretty sure there'll be other guys leaving too. We've got to get a top-notch international hooker.
I don't know from where in this current climate. See,
I think they're just going to pump the resource and the money into the two that are there, Shanahan and what's the other lad?
But they're going to have to learn how to throw a lot better.
Yeah, no, I get you, but
they're going to have to do so. They're going to have to do something. They're going to have to upskill those guys, and they're going to have to do it pretty rapidly because, for whatever reason, I don't know why, but in the Irish game, being able to throw a ball into a line out is not considered to be a primary function, or not considered to be a primary skill for a hooker. I don't know why. If you look back over them, with the exception maybe of Gerry Flannery and Shane Byrne, there's been very few who would be top notch at that. Sheehan was okay. Keith Wood was okay. Cronin, very hit and miss. Rory Best, very hit and miss. Rob Herring, very hit and miss, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm surprised Tom McCartney never got a cap while he was here.
Yeah. Like, even the guy down in Connacht, when Connacht were playing Ulster a few weeks ago in a game that they should have won, but they lost. I'm not saying you can attribute the entire defeat, but a lot of that defeat was down to them, their inability to win any ball from the line out.
Yeah.
Because it was blustery day, and I think it was actually wasn't it Kelleher? Was it Kelleher? Not Kelleher. Sorry, it was
Delahunt.
No, it was the guy who played for Ireland during the autumn series.
Is that not Shane Delahunt?
Yeah,
was it? Okay. Anyway, he came on, and my God, he couldn't. And like, okay, we know it's a win today.
Kazar Spanjo.
Yeah, but I think they for sure. But you know, like every time he threw the ball, it was a crooked in and a line, and it's back for a scrum. Anyway,
I think they should line up a load of cows, arses, and hand them all banjos.
Yeah,
and get them practicing.
But just to take that on, I mean, our scrum is actually beginning to motor again. It looked very good actually against Connacht even on occasion. But you know, there's two formal and a third set pieces being the kick out or the kickoff. So there's three set pieces in a game. And for us, two of them aren't functioning properly. Our kickoff receptions are very, very poor at the moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you had that. Yeah. You had one where Dave Carney, who's normally, you know, Mr. Reliable, miscontrolled one with his foot, then picked it up and then, you know, allowed himself to be tackled into touch. You know, that kind of stuff is not... It's not evidence of proper preparation.
Yeah, well, I don't know what we're not going to fix it for them anyway.
We will.
This match obviously against Ulster is going to be quite interesting, bearing in mind that there's so many ex-Leinster players or lads that were, say, born in Leinster. And it was interesting to read McFarlane's quote where he said, players don't play for a flag. They don't play for motherhood. They don't play for apple pie. They play for their friends. That's what they play for. Because I mean, and I'm sure I've missed some. I'm going through Marty Moore, John Cooney, Ono Sullivan, Jack McGrath, Nick Timoney,
Greg Jones,
Alan O'Connor, Jordy Murphy, Ian Madigan. There's a good few other lads that I'm missing out there as well. It was interesting seeing them being interviewed after I think it was the Munster match, and nearly every one of them had a Dublin accent.
Yeah, it's actually what McFarlane said echoes something. I don't know if you remember, Michael Checa said it at one stage before as well. That basically you play for your teammates.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Joe Schmidt has spoken about it as well. And McFarlane seems to have got them going well. He certainly seems a cannier coach than Ulster have had in a while. There'll be a tough team. I don't think they'll have a stronger selection brought down to Dublin, because I think there's kind of like the way that these kind of games go is you pick your strong team at home.
Yeah. Unless he's used some sort of bargaining chip to say, well, like Leinster and Munster are still in the heel of the hunt in Europe. So, you know, those lads, like, you know, the Gary Ringrose of this world have got two extra big games that they have to play. Whereas, you know, he can say, well, look, we're pretty much out of the first tier of Champions Cup rugby after losing our opening two. I promise you, we won't play Billy Burns.
Yeah.
You know, sort of so that he'd be rested if I can have him for this game, because we've obviously got a lot of skin in the game in the Pro 14.
I think there's no question that they're going to play a really the strongest possible team. Like you just said, if they've nothing to play for in Europe, they'd be better off sending the Espoirs to wherever the hell they're going. Toulouse, is it?
Yeah.
Well, already, yeah, it is Toulouse. Like, send the Espoirs to Toulouse and then, play their strongest team against Leinster. That's what I'd do if I was Dan McFarlane.
I'd be very strongly, if I were Dan McFarlane, making the argument saying you want these guys in tip-top condition coming into Irish camp. Because he has a fair few guys who are from the Irish camp. You want these guys in tip-top condition in who are match-ready. They're not going to get match-ready playing in the Donkey Derby in the Challenge Cup. You need them match-ready from Pro 14, so let me have them. So it'll all depend. A lot of it will depend on what agreement has been brokered amongst the provinces in terms of player availability and stuff, and what Andy Farrell has, because Andy Farrell might have a different prerequisite than Joe Schmidt. You never know. So
do Leinster cry foul then and say, "Well, we played by the rules. We rested."
I'd say it's all been agreed in advance, Jay, in terms of you know, selection patterns.
Yeah. A, it'll be all agreed in advance, and B, Leinster are not going to be, well, Leinster actually might be resting people because of Northampton's game being called off with multiple against COVID Leicester this weekend, yeah. Multiple COVID cases. So Leinster might have a weekend off the following weekend and might not have to travel to the UK. So there's a rest weekend that we could target. But you know, even if Leinster are playing both games in Europe, they're not going to rest players in Europe. Ulster can afford to because they're gone from the top tier. So I'd suggest that, you know, that they will have access, depending on how they go with COVID and injuries. I'm not sure that who is available to them, but whoever is available to them, I bet you is coming down to Dublin this weekend.
But there won't be any, I don't think there'll be any kind of sneaky selections or agreements broached or anything like that. I think that, you know, the four provinces know who they can select and how often they can select them and when they select them.
Yeah, but that was kind of the point I was trying to make, that if Ulster turn around and they will use the excuse of, you know, just say that the IRFU have said to each of the four provincial directors of rugby, you can use your frontline international player for 80 minutes, right? So whether that's, let's say, Gary Ringrose. So Gary Ringrose gets picked because he hasn't played in the opening two matches, right? One was postponed, and one, obviously, we're going to play against Ulster. He didn't play against Connacht. And Billy Burns has played the full 80 minutes in the match against
Munster.
Connacht, that's it. Munster, right. So he's not allowed play, regardless of whether they have a game in the challenge or regardless of whether they're still have an involvement in the European Cup or not. It's been agreed that the frontline players are only allowed to play 80 minutes over the interpros. Now, I don't know whether that's the case or not, but I'm just saying that if they go back and renegotiate and say, well, it's not fair that Gary Ringer is only allowed to play 80 minutes, and while they're playing one of their frontline international players for two matches, regardless of whether he's going to be rested the following week when we play Toulouse and we're in a full-on Heineken Cup match against Northampton Saints, provided it goes ahead.
I don't think it's going to be a factor at all. I mean, the union knows what it wants from these games. The provinces know what the union has told them, and woe betide anyone who crosses the Union.
Oh, well, sayonara, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Matt O'Connor.
Yeah.
Matt O'Connor.
Matt O'Connor. We have a quick look at some of the other games, lads, and we come back to, before we go, just back to the tie game. So, obviously, we take on Ulster first against second. The other Irish involvement next weekend is Munster against Connacht. Like, you know, Connacht still have very, they're 8 points behind Munster. They've both played 8 games, so they have a couple of extra games that they need to play. But like, if they beat Munster, like, they are back in that competition. And you know, it's happened before that Connacht have beaten them down in sports grounds.
Is Munster Connacht in the sports ground?
Yeah.
Is it? Okay.
I'll tell you one guy who'll be approaching this game with sanguine calm and will be, you know, the most laid-back person west of the Shannon between now and kickoff, and that's Bundiaki. How up for it do you think he is for this game, if he's available for selection? Whether he's available for selection or not, how up for it do you think he is for this game?
Well, I thought, Dave, that he kind of made a bit of a hames of him of it when... against in the Ulster match, he got sin binned for quite a reckless
barge.
And he kind of, like, again, I'm loath to point my finger and to say, you know, we lost or they lost the game because of this incident. It didn't help, because I think Ulster scored 2 tries when he was in the bin.
Yeah.
So, you know, I suppose he wants to make amends of that. But then again,
he also plays very well against Munster.
I'm not sure whether or not he might fall into that category of you're allowed to play one game.
Well, no, I don't know. That's a very true point. He always plays very well against Munster, though. They do kind of.
He does. I can remember him. I think the year they won the league,
he was down in Coleman Park. Definitely. Himself and Henshaw tore them apart.
Yeah. Just quickly looking at, there's the Welsh Derbies, Dragons against the Ospreys, and Cardiff against Scarlets. Like, I don't want to discuss them, because you just question whether the Welsh clubs have the same amount of interest in the Pro 14. Like, this would have been a great opportunity for them to showcase. They're playing a local derby.
I think the clubs themselves have the interest in it, and I think the players have the interest in it. I mean, we shouldn't mistake what a certain section of the Welsh rugby following public is saying with what the teams and the players are. I think that the Welsh teams themselves, just from a purely rugby perspective, are in a bit of a trough in terms of strength. And I think they're in a bit of a trough in terms of their coaching at this point in time. I mean, there's the whole changeover from the Gatland years. Things are different. The guys don't have that. Like, guys would come back from Gatland camp feeling like they were 20 feet tall after Warren had worked his magic on them. And that would last for a while, and then they kind of dropped this off. They don't have that boost at all now, because for whatever reason they're not. But, you know, Team Wales is still greater than the sum of its parts. So the good players in Wales, they're just not playing very well, and there's a restricted amount of them. I was watching it was Ospreys last weekend, or I clicked into a bit of it, and Dan Lydiate was playing. There was a time when Dan Lydiate was considered, you know, if you were picking your world's best back row, you'd have to have a conversation about having Dan Lydiate in it. And that wasn't all that long ago. When was the last Lions tour?
Yeah.
You know, and you look at him now, and he's not playing that well at all. There's been a huge drop-off in form in a lot of Welsh players. Of course, maybe that's, you know, drop-off in form now and be ready for the next World Cup. You don't have to be good right now. Who knows?
That's true.
Welsh rugby, in terms of its playing strength and in terms of its regional coaching appears to be weaker than it has been in recent years.
Yeah. One bit of news, I suppose, that came through was the winger, Van der Meer, moving to Worcester.
Like, oh, yeah.
Once again, Scottish, like, they spend, that just drives me mad. Like, they spend 3 years getting him qualified. He qualifies, he gets his cap, and he buggers off. Like, they must be really pissed off with him. But maybe that's their policy. Maybe that's their policy and get someone else to pay for him.
I think that, well, for start, Scotland don't have an equivalent of a Gatlin's Law or an unwritten guideline like the IRFU do. They'll pick guys from wherever.
Yeah.
And the other thing is,
he'll still get caps if you know, if Finn Russell isn't in favour, or if whoever isn't in favour, he'll still get caps. Like,
tradition of Scottish sportsmen going south of the border, going back hundreds of years, not just a couple of years, going back hundreds of years.
I get that, Dave, but it is just counterproductive to their club rugby. Sure, it has to be that they're spending, you know, like, I get it if you have a guy that comes through, you know, playing for Hoik or Alloa or one of those clubs, and he comes through and it's quite a tradition that, you know, you want to make your money and you get more books by going play for Edinburgh for a couple of seasons and then go down to the Premiership and double your money or whatever. This guy up sticks and came from South Africa. I presume he was on good wedge to do that. And it just, it's almost like, you know, Coetzee, loyalty. Like, your man Coetzee has had two ACL reconstructions. He's been there for 4 or 5 years, and Ulster stood by him when he was injured. And, you know, not only did he leave at the end of his contract, he hasn't even got to the end of his contract. He left a year early.
Yeah. In fairness to Coetzee, he really does give it out on the pitch.
No, he does. He's a great player. He's a great player. That back doesn't necessarily make him a very loyal player. He's a very good player, a great player.
You could argue they haven't got their money out of him for sure with the ACL reconstructions. But my point was that when he is on the pitch, he really gives 100%.
Oh, he's the best player.
However,
without him, there's no ball carrying.
My point on the Scottish teams is all of that is, like, we're just about okay with four teams to keep all our players in Ireland. Scotland don't have four teams. They've got two. So they nearly need to send, and Wales the same, they've got four teams. They nearly need to send players abroad just to bring other ones through so they'll have enough bloody players. So it's actually not as big a downside for them to have guys abroad than it is for us. Because our systems are much more in mesh, and we've got, with four teams, we've just got the space to do that. Scotland don't, so...
Not a big problem. I mean, Scotland has a problem. I mentioned before about their tradition of professional players heading south. I mean, the first professional football team in England was composed entirely of Scots. But the problem is that they're losing at this point in time. Not only are they losing the guys they expect to lose, they're losing the guys that are replacing them. So, for example, I mean, Glasgow would have expected to lose Finn Russell. You know, that was going to happen. But now they've lost young Hastings as well. They would have expected to lose Stuart Hogg from the Scottish game. But now there's rumours that Blair Kinghorn may be heading south as well. Again, just rumours. So not only are they losing the guys that they expect to lose, they lose the guys that those guys made room for. And that's the cycle is the sine waves are coming too close together. The frequency is too close. They'd like to get, you know, maybe 3 or 4, maybe 5 years out of the next guy along before they go. And they're not getting that. And that's the problem for them.
Yeah, that's a good point. But guys who come in from South Africa, give them a cap. They're tied to Scotland then. So if they're playing in Worcester or they're playing wherever, they can still be capped for Scotland. So they're they're potential players that are outside of the system, which is kind of good when you're only two teams, you know. That's my point. And Twins are red about, of course.
Guys, wait till the South African teams come into the Pro 14 or Pro 16, as it will be. You know, let's say 12 months' time, hopefully, touch wood, we're out of this COVID craziness and it's back to sort of some sort of normal. And we're 12 months away from now. And you've got South African teams in. If the Scottish teams keep hemorrhaging their excellent international standard players, then, you know, then the Pro 16 is going to become four Irish, a couple of the Welsh, and the four South Africans. And then there's going to be this massive gap of possibly the two Italians, two Welsh, and the two Scots would be just might as well be in a different league because they're going to be trounced when you've got two full strength teams playing each other. Because if the Scottish players continue to up sticks and head down to England to play in the Premiership.
I would say somewhat facetiously, Jason, to what you've just said, if there was the four Irish and the four South African teams and then the rest, that would at least double the strength of the league.
Well, maybe so.
But in terms of what you're saying, it's perfectly true. The one thing that's in our favour is South Africa do have a selection policy for their what once were super rugby provinces in terms of the numbers of players who aren't available to South African selection within their squads. And most of those places are taken up by Namibians and Zimbabweans that they're trying to qualify for South Africa. So the idea of like that a province or a region or in Scotland's case would put a lot of effort into a guy, cap him, and then he buggers off back to South Africa. That part of it won't really happen. The Coetzee thing, certainly, yeah. But Duane van der Merwe is dead to South African rugby now.
Oh, no. And I get that. But, like, he's going to go to either France or a guy like him. Or, you know, the next bright young kid who's coming through, regardless of maybe he could be 19 years of age and we've never heard of him. But in 5 years' time, he's going to be the shiny new thing on the block. And, you know, we'll see him playing a couple of seasons and going, God, he's very good. And all of a sudden, he's playing for Bath or Bristol or whoever, you know. And again, you know, I take John's point. It's very valid that they've got to make space for that conveyor belt to come through with only having two pro teams. I get that. But if you put a lot of time and effort into somebody and all of a sudden he goes off to play in a different league, you know, it's kind of, well, we shouldn't be losing our stars. Get rid of the dross. Keep the stars.
Thing is, nobody wants the dross.
Yeah.
Perhaps a lot of Newcastle should take them or something.
Yeah, there's a lot of dross in the English gallery. I mean, boys, just briefly before we go, let's just return to our game against Ulster. I guess we obviously don't know. It's Wednesday night, so we don't know what the selections are going to be. What's that?
They're going to be a raggle taggle selection of whoever's standing. We don't know who's got COVID or what the implications are for the people who are close to them and isolation, all of that stuff. There could be a lot of players missing due to all that. Probably rightly, we don't know that. It's a medical thing. We don't need to know it. But we've got so many injuries on top of that. Yes, there's a little bit of good news with the Larmers. And I saw Tadhg Furlong out running around. I'm not sure he's not going to be there this week, but he may be there for Europe. You know, there's a few players like that are coming back into the system, which is great. But I don't think, we'll be allowed to play all the internationals that are available to us. I'm not sure how many are going to be available. We went through the situation at 10. Like, that's a pivotal position, you know. Presumably, we've Gibson Park coming back in to join Luke McGrath. That's great. That's the other halfback position locked down. But 10 is a massive problem. Outside backs are a huge problem. Like, you saw the team we played against Connacht. That's a home game. There's two guys making their debut. Now, they're great young players, but they were a little bit rabbit in the headlights you know, not due to their own fault, but due to the team they were playing in. And, you know, they were expected to step up as if they'd played 20 games. And this was their debut. Normally players make their debut surrounded by a good, strong team at home, like, you know, where they've a good chance of, especially in the RDS, they have a good chance of winning the game. That wasn't the case. So I just think that, you know, we seem to have enough in the pack just about, but I'm kind of fearful from nine outward. You know, we're 1 to 9, we seem to be fine and reserves for those positions, but from 10 to 15.
Depends who we have back.
Yeah, well, it's at 10 to 15 is where the problem is. So, yeah. You know, unless we're going to maul over all our tries, which looks unlikely since we can't win a bloody line out.
Larmer is, as I said earlier, is in contention. Then, like, there's sort of question marks over whether Frawley's hammer has come true or Jimmy O'Brien and O'Loughlin's shoulder injuries have cleared up. Like, you know, they might be pressed into action regardless of whether they're...
What about Ringshaw?
I haven't heard either of those. And like...
Ringrose is out with his jaw. He broke his jaw.
You're right, of course. Yes, I forgot about that.
He broke his jaw, yeah.
Yeah, no, you're right.
He broke the other jaw. He broke his other side of his jaw.
So he's a Henshaw probably might be back, actually. That's something one I hadn't thought of. But, it could be a bit of a bloodbath. We'll see tomorrow. Probably before, by the time this airs, we'll see... We'll see what's what. But yeah, I have a funny feeling it could be the raggle taggle gypsy I was lining out in the back line anyway on Friday. So fingers crossed, boys.
Yeah, well, hopefully. Anyway, boys, as ever, thanks very much. Thanks very much for watching. If you are following us on Facebook or Twitter, please give us a like and a subscription. Thanks again. Cheers.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.